today on Compassion Radio.
Han said to me, I used to go down to the other villages, and I used to kill the people. I used to eat the people. I was very violent. I had no peace. And he said, now I follow the narrow way. I don't kill anybody. Now I have peace.
Intrepid.
When God tells you to go, then everything works out. He provides.
Involved.
It is so exciting to see what God can do. And this is why there is so much hope.
International.
Compassion Radio allows the listener to get involved in projects that are going to change history.
This is Compassion Radio. From sparkling Emerald Isles to the Himalayan mountaintops, the gospel is being proclaimed, and we're the ones to bring you that story. Today on Compassion Radio, we begin a new series on great missions callings of the 21st century. Where is the opportunity? And what are believers doing to meet that challenge? Norm's guest today is a certified expert on many areas of missiology and church history. Here's Norm to set up this fascinating trek into every major region where God is at work.
You know, one of the most exciting things going on in the world today is the advancement of the kingdom of Christ or the kingdom of God all around the world. It is so important for us as followers of Jesus to follow him wherever he goes. And to do that means to be a global Christian. It means to be aware of what God is doing all over the world. And I would say even particularly in those places that we tend to label as God-forsaken places. Of course, that's a misnomer. There are no God-forsaken places. But it's easy to think in those terms as we read the headlines. So what we're going to be doing for the next few days with our guest on Compassion Radio, Dr. Charles Farhadian from Westmont College, the chairperson of the Religious Studies Department there and an expert in world Christianity, we're going to be exploring over a four-day period basically the topic, what is God doing on these particular continents? And we're going to be talking about Asia and South America and Africa, Europe. And then, of course, there's Oceania, islands of the Pacific, where God is definitely at work. And so I'm excited about this opportunity to share this marvelous professor at my alma mater and to profit myself from hearing him develop on this theme, what is God doing in these continental contexts all over the world? All right, our guest today on Compassion Radio, I'm happy to say, is Dr. Charles Farhadian, a favorite professor at my alma mater, Westmont College, up in beautiful Santa Barbara. And Dr. Farhadian is chairperson of the Religious Studies Department there at Westmont. He's also an expert in world Christianity and the author of several very, very fine books on the subject, and has agreed to help us learn more about what God is doing all around the world. So, Dr. Farhadian, it's great to have you on with us.
Thank you, Norm, and appreciate the warm welcome. And I, too, look forward to reviewing some of these wonderful areas in the world and what God is doing and has done in those regions.
Well, you know, I'm really going to be in a learning mode right off the bat because we made the decision to begin with Oceania or the island nations of the Pacific Ocean, including such places as New Guinea, a sizable country, and other important areas in that region. Dr. Farhadian, why is it important for us to put our feet down in these places that dot the beautiful Pacific? Why is it important for us to begin in this area?
Well, it's a great question. Well, some people enjoy surfing in those areas, I guess, and I am from Santa Barbara, so I know we have students who enjoy those areas well, but I started my research and Christian service in that part of the world. So it's where I began my personal journey, learning about world Christianity and the church around the world. And I could tell you a bit about that if you'd like.
Oh, absolutely.
When I was 18 years old, I saw this film by the Richardsons, Don and Carol Richardson, a film and a book called Peace Child. And as a high school student, I was a senior in high school, and I said, well, God, if you're so big, I want to go right there into that village. The village was on the south coast of the western half of New Guinea. Of course, God was so big because I was able to go there shortly after and spend the summer.
You know, that magnificent book that you referred to, Peace Child, and then was made into a movie, I think that was perhaps the source of the first real insight I had into contextualization. Fabulous story, and I don't know if you feel that you can tell that story, but it's just amazing how God works and establishes, gives us common ground with people that seem to be totally different from us.
That's right. And the presupposition of that book and the missionary strategy used by Don and Carol Richardson, which I believe is not only biblical, but a part of historic Christianity, was this notion that God had preceded the missionaries to that particular region, and God had prepared the culture beforehand to communicate the gospel using the culture itself. So it's a very different way of thinking about mission. That is, a missionary going to a context and being a student of culture, you know, a student of the area first, and then seeing how God has already been present, and how then to continue to communicate the good news using the cultural elements that are already there. And that's what they did in the village on the South Coast.
One of the things that's really important for us, perhaps at the outset, is to understand where these areas are. Now, most of us, I think, would say that we know where Africa is, but I'm thinking of, for example, Papua New Guinea. How many people listening right now could say, yeah, we can tell you exactly where it is, and it's right above Australia?
That's right. That's an easy one to remember, because the island of New Guinea is about 300 miles north of Australia. But this is another reason why I think it's important not to forget about the Pacific, because whenever we talk about world Christianity, we typically think about these big nations like China, for obvious reasons, India, for obvious reasons, of course, Korea, because of its mission-sending history. But we often forget about the Pacific. I'll give you a very brief introduction to the Pacific.
Please do.
Three major island groups. First set is called Polynesia. The Nesia there, actually, of Polynesia comes from the Greek that means island. So Polynesia means many islands, and some of those islands we're familiar with, like Tonga, Fiji, Cook Islands, Society Islands, even Hawaii is probably the most famous for Americans. Outside of Polynesia, then you have the Micronesians, the small islands, and those are northwest of Polynesia, and those are the Marshall Islands, Caroline Islands, and Kiribati Islands. And then closer to Australia, the third group, the Melanesia. Melan, of course, you remember in your elementary biology or high school biology courses, means black, like black skin. If somebody has a lot of melan in their epidural system, then they have black skin. So Melanesia is the islands of black people, black-skinned islands. The border is New Guinea, massive island, second largest island in the world, all the way to Fiji. And Fiji is a real transitional zone where you get straight hair Polynesians and kinky hair Melanesians. You know, you get that mix there in Fiji.
Yeah. Now, tell us a little bit about your experience there at Papua New Guinea. What did you learn there? What door was open to you into the work of this missionary God that we believe in and that we seek to serve?
I was probably 18. In fact, I think I had my 19th birthday there in the jungle, living with the same tribe, the Sawi people. Different village than the Richardsons had worked in, but worked with the Sawi and also a group called the Kayagar. Well, there's several lessons, but I'll just tell you one. God works in very mysterious ways. I'll give you a brief story. I was very down one day. I was walking in the village. I grew up in the San Francisco area, very urban, and I'd never been into a jungle like that before. And there was an old man in the village named Han. He was from the Kayagar tribe. And on his chest, you could see the history of warfare, because arrows would have gone into his chest, and he pulled them out, and those barbs ripped up his flesh. And he knelt down and picked up from the jungle floor a big piece of wood, and he put it right before me. And he said, and this is all translated through a German missionary there, Hans said to me, you know, a long time ago, I used to go down to the Asmat, I used to go down to the other villages, and I used to kill the people, I used to eat the people, I was very violent, I had no peace. And then he knelt down and he picked up a small piece of wood and he said, now I follow the narrow way. I don't kill anybody. Now I have peace. And I thought, here's this guy ministering to me. I'm the educated one. And at that point, I was starting my college career, but You know, I had modern education behind me, good dental hygiene, good health, but I was broken. And here was this man who was so tattered, but was so confident in God's power to bring peace to his life and the tribe's life. So, you know, one lesson was God will always surprise us by the vessels that God uses to give himself glory.
What are the population centers of this region of the Pacific? How many people are we talking about here?
The immense diversity. Mm-hmm. When we think of Polynesia, you know, when we think of Fiji or New Guinea or Micronesia, there are hundreds of islands in most of these island groups. So there are easily between 20 and 30,000 islands in the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, my goodness.
There are over 5 million people. Now, that's a small number of people.
Mm-hmm.
Norm, you just came back from an area of the world that has the largest population in the world. So there are some cities with over 5 million people. But the whole area of the Pacific is just over 5 million. If I do my math correctly, I think this area spans about 9 time zones.
Oh, my.
Think about this. Just north of New Guinea, there is the equator, which, if you remember back in school, that's a very hot region of the world, right? The equator goes around the world. It tends to be the hottest place. And on New Guinea as well, they have some very high mountains, and there are glaciers in those equatorial regions. So we call them equatorial glaciers. So there's ice up in the mountains.
Yeah.
It's just unheard of throughout this area, relatively small compared to the larger cities that we're used to throughout Europe or North America.
I'm assuming that all of these different peoples, and taking into account certainly the diversity involved in this, but all of them probably have very strong religious beliefs. They're part of religious belief systems. Is there any way that you can generalize, characterize what their religious backgrounds would be in this region?
Mm-hmm. It's very difficult because there are Polynesian kinds of strands, Micronesian and Melanesian strands. I would say one thing that seems to be very common in the area is the importance of social groupings, of families, of extended families. So what you have in various areas, when people converted and became Christians, they often converted in mass.
Mm-hmm.
So these were mass conversions. And, you know, especially for evangelicals, this was very challenging, because most evangelicals are used to or want to promote individual conversions.
Yeah.
But in this area of the world, people are so tied to family and clan and tribe that if the chief, or what's called in Melanesia, the big man, converts, then generally everyone else will convert with him. It's fascinating to look at the missionary discussions back and forth. And then a place like Fuller Theological Seminary, where you have eventually Donald McGavran, you know, a great mission scholar, who was writing about these kinds of things. Are these mass conversions legitimate or not? So I think that's one thing that's interesting about this area. Another interesting thing about the Pacific, because of its island identity, its archipelagic identity, is that conversions, Christianity itself, moved from Polynesia, particularly Tonga, into Micronesia, and then finally into Melanesia. And how did people do this? Well, once they converted, especially if the local kings converted, they got in their boats and their outriggers, and they went to the next island group, and they shared the gospel. So this is way before airplanes and that kind of thing. So Christianity spread very quickly, and I think it's fair to say that today, this part of the world is one of the most, if not the most, Christianized area in the world, with the highest percentage,
is that right?
percentage of Christians. Yeah, for sure.
Compassion Radio is active in countries all around the world. Here's how we're making a difference in the world this month.
Those of you who are longtime listeners know that for many, many years we've had an annual project of raising money for Bibles for China. And we've always done it over Christmas, and we are doing the project again this year, but now we're doing it for Christmas. The pastor shepherd of thousands of house churches to whom our Bibles are going to go has asked if we could get the Bibles to him in time this year to give to people at Christmas. We know that for every Bible we place, there will be four or five people come to know Christ just through the placement of one Bible. We know that there are 20,000 to 30,000 new Christians in China every day. Now, can you help us to get the Bibles to China for Christmas this year. Also, as you've heard us tell you, there are well over 100,000 Chinese missionaries that are moving out across the ancient Silk Road trade routes to take back all of that Islamic territory for Jesus Christ. They understand that this Back to Jerusalem movement could help stop extremist Muslim terrorism right in its tracks. Now, as an added incentive to send your money for Bibles for China this year, we want to provide you, at your request, for your gift of $25 or more, a very inspiring book that Norm has chosen for you specifically called The Grave Robber, or How Jesus Can Make Your Impossible Possible. It's written by Mark Batterson, who's a New York Times bestselling author. This is a 275-page paperback book, and it reveals the incredible power of the seven miraculous signs of Jesus that are found in the Gospel of John. These are not only things Jesus did in the past, but also something he wants to do now in the present. Mark shares true stories of people who are witnessing the countless miracles, big and small, that we take for granted every day. These miracles point us toward the one who healed the sick, calmed the storm, and even raised the dead. And if you long to see God work in miraculous ways today, you will love this faith-building, life-giving message. This is recommended by Pastor Rick Warren and by Roma Downey and Mark Burnett. So make this your first Christmas project this year. Give for Bibles for China, and then request for your gift of $25 or more this wonderful book called The Grave Robber.
Will you join us? 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. That's Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And we're on the internet at CompassionRadio.com.
Talking about this penchant for sharing what they have found in Jesus Christ and the giving of their lives over to Him, how is it that they realize in some way that they need to go and share it with others? Why not just say, well, it's like a precious diamond, what I have here, the spiritual inheritance, I'm going to keep it for myself, keep it pure, keep it safe. Where did the impulse to share what they had found, where did that come from?
In many senses, maybe the real answer is it's the power of the Holy Spirit in them.
Mm-hmm.
A sociologist, anthropologist may not say that, but God was working. Let me give you a great example. There were tribal stories and rituals throughout this region that were satisfied, answered, if you will, through the introduction of the good news. And people got so excited when they heard about the good news that they could not but share that. The place I've done a lot of work and research in is the highlands of New Guinea. And in the people group I worked with, they had a tradition where at death of a loved one, they're supposed to cut off portions of their finger.
My goodness.
They use what's called a finger cutter. In fact, I have one here in my office.
No.
If you ever want to come and use it, they would literally cut their finger and the blood would rush out. And the idea there is in the tribal thinking that once they fill the quota of suffering, of blood in the village through suffering, then they would reach a state of salvation. And the whole group, this would be a whole group idea that the whole tribe or the whole clan would be saved. They wouldn't have to suffer anymore. Children would not die. The earth would produce great, delicious vegetation. Well, for years, generations, as people would die, people on their deathbed would say, remember, they'd say Nabalon Cabalon, you know, this ceremony of cutting the finger.
Mm-hmm.
And they would do this, and of course it would hurt. And you could see even people today who have missing fingers. But when the Christian missionaries went up to the highlands of New Guinea, and after a few years they learned the language of the people, they communicated that the God-man, Jesus, filled the quota of suffering, and that people did not have to cut themselves anymore.
Oh, boy.
And people by the tens of thousands rushed down from those very isolated villages up in these equatorial glacier regions and other regions of the mountains, and they came to Christ. And they said, they literally said, we have been waiting for generations to hear this news. I just learned this. Actually, I had a chance to talk to the first missionary there at that moment. He was literally leaving the island for the last time after being there for decades. It was a very powerful moment. And I ran into him, and his name is Gordon Larson, did a PhD at Michigan in linguistics, very bright guy from the Christian Missionary Alliance. And I said, Gordon, what needs to be done? And he said, you know, from every large village that converted, they sent out 200 to 300 missionaries, local missionaries, who had to learn different languages, and some became martyrs. And Christianity spread throughout the highlands of New Guinea very rapidly because it satisfied that ritual longing.
Well, now, is the growth of the gospel, the expansion of the church in these Pacific islands, still growing in terms of its influence and in terms of numeric growth, or has it sort of topped off at a certain level? How do we understand the growth of the gospel in this whole region of the world?
That's a great question, and there's been a lot of change throughout the Pacific, and it depends on, of course, if we want to include New Zealand and Australia.
Sure.
Many people include those two regions as part of what's called Oceania.
Mm-hmm.
We know, say, for instance, in Australia, there's been a huge increase in the secularization of society. So Australia has some similar challenges as we in the West with Christianity. In terms of these other major regions like Micronesia, Melanesia, Polynesia, things have been more stagnant in terms of growth. And I should add that particularly after World War II, there's been a fairly dramatic increase in the number of Mormons throughout some of these areas. So Mormonism entered fairly early, I would say early 20th century, but after World War II became, in a sense, much more successful. Even Christians were converting to Mormonism, and of course there are seminaries and whatnot throughout that region as well.
Let me just raise this question, and I'm afraid we're going to have to end with this, Charlie, but to what degree does Islam exert an influence in this region of the world? And is it a major competitor, as it is in so many other parts of the world?
Yes, that's a very tricky question. Let me back up and say a couple of things. You're not asking me about Mormonism, but I do want to make a statement about that as
Sure, please do.
But one of the attractive things about Mormonism is its sense of community. And I think many Christian churches maybe can do better with that aspect, because the Mormons are really good at identifying communities and having people cohere or stay as groups as they convert. In Islam, what's attractive to some is the ability to have multiple wives. Now, that's not a major movement, but in some of the tribal contexts that did have multiple wives, that is an attractive feature. And I don't want to say Islam is just about a family relationship the way I just described, but there are some attractive features that work particularly well in areas that have polygamy, for instance. You asked about Islam more particularly in terms of the region. In New Guinea, New Guinea is a major island, the second largest island in the world, but it's split. It's split down the middle, somewhat like Haiti and Dominican Republic.
Yeah, exactly.
In New Guinea, this gets a little strange with the language, but the eastern half is the independent nation of Papua New Guinea, and the western half actually is called Papua and belongs to Indonesia. And Indonesia is the largest Muslim nation in the world. So the western half of that island is becoming Islamicized. There are many more Muslims on the western half of the island. On the eastern half in Papua New Guinea, I just read a PhD dissertation that showed that Islam has grown 500% in Papua New Guinea. And that's not by immigration, that's by conversion of Christians leaving Christianity and entering Islam.
My. Charles Verhaadi, and this has been a very fascinating time with you as we've talked about what God is doing in the islands of the Pacific, Oceania, as Dr. Verhaadi put it, and we need to be aware of these things. I hope that this series of 4 days is going to send people to their atlases and do some map studies and find out where these places are, and maybe do a little, not assigned homework, but the kind of homework that's the best kind, and that is we want to find out more about this region or these regions as we talk about them over these 4 days. Charlie, and it's okay, by the way, if I call Dr. Farhadi and Charlie. I think we settled that already. But
yes, that's right.
It's been great to have you on the program today, and we look forward to tomorrow as we consider another region of the world and what God is doing to build his church. Thanks so much, Charlie. We'll see you tomorrow on the radio.
Thank you so much, Norm.
Remember, your gift of even $6 can provide new Bibles to Christian Chinese missionaries who are spreading out all across Central Asia. $60 provides 10 Bibles. $120 provides 20 Bibles. $600 provides 100 Bibles, and so on. And during the month of October, as we launch our Operation God's Word project, we'd love to send you, for your gift of $25 or more, and at your request, the special book titled The Grave Robber: How Jesus Can Make Your Impossible Possible, by Mark Batterson. As you probably know, he's a New York Times best-selling author, and for good reason. This special offer is a 275-page paperback and reveals the incredible power of the 7 miraculous signs of Jesus found in the Gospel of John. Those miracles point us to the one who healed the sick, calmed the storm, and even raised the dead. If you long to see God work in miraculous ways today, then you're going to love this faith-building, life-giving book. It's recommended by Rick Warren, Roma Downey, and Mark Burnett, among many others. Request yours today. The number to reach us is 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. You can also reach us 24/7 on the internet at CompassionRadio.com. I'm Bram Floria. We'll see you tomorrow.